Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're here in the Rugby Dungeon to dissect the final weekend of the Six Nations as Wales are crowned Grand Slam champions. And, well, the three of us are here. The man with all the answers, JB.
Hello, Timothy.
The man with all the stats, Phil.
Hello, Timothy.
And I'm the man with no questions. I'm Tim.
Ever. No questions ever.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in a little bit. How are you doing? Where did you watch the rugby, Phil, this weekend?
I was at home. Me and young Thomas in his England kit.
Lovely.
Both of us in our England kits, watching three very interesting games, each for different reasons.
Yes.
He seemed to enjoy it. Less so the rugby, but more kind of staring at me when I was getting more animated and then less animated.
Throughout, more animated again.
And then, just the Italy game throughout the day. Where did you watch it, Tim?
Well, I expect we both had the invite extended from JB to watch games with him. I'm really glad I didn't take him up on that offer.
Well,
I'm relieved.
I saw one of our friends who did take him up on the offer this morning, who got in at 5 a.m.
Where did they go?
Was in a very bad way.
Wow.
Oh, I wish I stayed with them, though. I actually took myself home relatively early. I got very drunk, got a tram home. On the way home, I ordered the pizza on Just Eat, or whatever the service is. Completely forgot, woke up this morning to get some breakfast, pizza on the doorstep. So heated it up.
Perfect.
Nice.
That would have been like when you accidentally put on France to lose the Six Nations had they have lost the Six Nations.
They can't even lose properly.
Accidental winning.
I know.
I'm a bit disappointed with the poor quality of foxes in Chalton in South Manchester.
That is poor.
Scavenging urban foxes.
Maybe they're so plentiful, the pizzas on doorsteps, that they just, no, I don't fancy that. No, pineapple, nah.
Hummus. Well, they only eat hummus.
Quinoa and hummus pizza. Yeah.
Right, we are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We're currently streaming this on YouTube, so go and subscribe and watch there. And you know where to find us and all the rest of it. So, yes, on this podcast, we're going to be talking about Six Nations rugby. I think we'll have more of a newsy focused short podcast, which also looks ahead to next weekend's domestic rugby, which all kicks off again. The weeks of significant rugby just keep on coming. But it's interesting you said how animated you were getting during this weekend, because there was a point at this weekend where I thought, this is just rubbish.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that?
Well, but bearing in mind the Super Saturdays we've enjoyed in the past, and think back to that incredible one where we had 20 minutes of extra rugby between France and Wales.
Amazing.
And
that was incredible.
And then think back 2 years before that when we had the most ridiculous day of rugby where there were tries all over the show.
Where everyone had to outscore everyone else as the day went on.
Yeah.
It was good for different reasons, I think.
Oh, no, it was. But there was a point at which it was like, all right, well, Wales are clearly winning this. It's not even a contest. That means the rest of this game's kind of doesn't really mean anything, and the England-Scotland game really doesn't totally mean anything.
Yes, there was an element of that.
They should have had the Welsh game on last, shouldn't they?
Totally. The drama that would have created, Ireland knowing that they could win the championship before the match.
And it was disappointing because you could have predicted 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, that would have been the pivotal game.
Mm.
You would have thought that at least one team going into that was going for a Grand Slam, or A little bit disappointing.
Yeah.
But taking my England hat off, it was still a good day. It was still enjoyable. If you didn't have an English or an Irish or an Italian hat on, and you were a neutral, there were some incredible games, incredible storylines throughout the day. So I think it was very interesting still.
I think we should, you know, speak about the Grand Slam champions. Well done, England's women. Congratulations. Congratulations. Absolutely outstanding performance. We can probably take up half an hour talking about
the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, the rest of the podcast with that fantastic performance. The best team in Northern Hemisphere rugby.
Which women's rugby player played this weekend for her national team and her brother played for his national team?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Isn't it?
Hold on. I think I might know this
one.
No. No, I was suddenly thinking that... Both rugby.
They definitely played last weekend.
And he played
this weekend.
Did they both play seniors?
Seniors?
So he wasn't playing under 20s?
No. He's playing for the full men's team. She's playing for the full... ladies or women, the less offensive pronoun team.
Oh, I will go with Finn Russell. I don't know.
It was the second row, the Italian Ruzza family.
Nice.
So she plays for Italy. She's the heaviest member of their pack.
Unless every women's rugby player wants that accolade.
Well, I say heaviest member of the pack. I assume it's the whole team, unless they've got a very heavy back somewhere. Like Kelly Hyamona style Flyhoff somewhere. And he plays second row for the Italian national team. That's good, isn't it?
Congratulations to the Ruzza family.
Yeah. So, it's an incredible achievement.
Italian women did what Italian men could not do and beat France.
Did they?
Yeah, they fairly comfortably beat France.
Before we just get into the Six Nations, because I made the little joke about it at the start, can we very, very quickly and briefly just deal with my little gaffe?
What's
earlier?
The question?
Can we deal with my gaffe?
Go on then, Tim. Let's make it all about you.
No. Because I don't want anyone to think, because some people might listen to the start of a podcast, not the end. And I just want to kind of own it. So yeah, during the Premiership Rugby Cup final aftermath, interviewing man of the match James Grayson, I didn't ask a fully formed question, and he quite rightly pointed out.
I made
a statement, and he chose not to agree and play along and cover up for my incompetence.
But
and
a lot of people do that. It's an annoyance of mine that questions are sometimes statements, and then you just leave it there, and the player's got to either agree or they've got to disagree.
Yeah, well, it always brings agreement because
great play today.
Yeah.
What's the question?
That is quite a common form, so I am a little bit surprised he actually called you out on it.
Well, I think it shows the brashness and cockiness of a 10, and so I quite enjoyed it. And so I just want to, because again, we've talked about gaffes in the past with other people, and it's just, I think it's quite interesting to peel back the curtain a little bit. But so I didn't know the PA system was on. It came on halfway through the interview, and...
Was that playing back what you were saying on a slight delay?
There's a slight delay because it's coming out. I've got one earpiece in and it's coming out on the stadium speakers, but it wasn't coming out on the stadium speakers straight away, because then I would have been tuned into it and gone, okay, this is how it is. Mm-hmm. Something changed halfway through. Suddenly it was being put over the PA and I suddenly went, what was that? And in that sort of brain catching up to what happened, that just sort of threw me off, so I didn't ask a fully. I didn't totally finish the question that I started to ask.
I thought Grayson comes across really, really well, yeah. Really well rounded.
Well, this was my point actually, because for one, stones and glass houses and all of that. Everyone, you know, balls is up in their job or life or whatever at some point. But I actually thought it was a brilliant moment, and which was probably more revealing about James Grayson than anything he's ever said to the media before.
Yeah.
Because you kind of got a glimpse at the sense of humour, the cockiness in a good way of him, and how comfortable he is.
Well, he's got an interesting background, hasn't he? Because, like, as you pointed out, he's literally grown up in Northampton, in that stadium.
Mm.
I mean, the Graysons are about as integral to Northampton as, well, any family ever, I'd say.
To any rugby club.
Yeah, outside of maybe the Barwells.
Yeah, true. And the other thing is, you know, so I think you learnt a little bit about him, and I actually learnt a little bit about myself as well, because if I went back a couple of years, I think I probably would have been beating myself up about that.
Nah.
But actually, you don't know when things are all going well, and I imagine this is like this for elite players. When things are going well, you don't really have that sort of test. But when something balls is up, like you make a howler in a game, actually then, the way that you sort of process that and go...
So you're saying that you're now what you used to be, the Owen Farrell of broadcasting.
Yeah.
And now you're a Dan Bigger.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's what I'm saying.
Amazing, amazing.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's not even the biggest media balls up of the week by the Egg Chasers team. The biggest one is probably me filming... It's not even funny. It's not funny. Filming a video about banning the hacker and having it released one day before a match shooting.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
I hadn't even clocked that. Well, you can't help
I
that.
Know.
What can you do?
You can't help that.
It was filmed 5-6 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, but even if it was filmed 5-6 days ago,
I know. I know. And
I still believe it. Believe it.
Were you getting more messages than your Dan Bigger video?
No, people still found Dan Bigger more offensive.
Very good.
Oh, sorry. I'll tell you what. Before we get into the Six Nations, JB, can you just get the Kirby Enthusiasm music ready?
Yes, I can.
Are you ready with it?
I think so.
It'll be pretty obvious when you should play it.
Well, I think we've had a very good Six Nations, but the Scottish game will be our best performance.
Firstly, he wasn't totally wrong, was he?
No, he wasn't. He got something reasonably right.
28 minutes was a phenomenal performance.
I literally gave up watching this game. Turned my back to the TV and had a few more beers.
To be honest, I think half of the England back line did that. I think
that's what was in the water bottles.
I've watched this back again, and England was so in control and totally dominant that it was like at times towards the end of that first half and in that second half, that they just, players, through a combination of arrogance and laziness, just gave up. A good example is the McInally try, which he took brilliantly, but Owen Farrell, who should have been tracking back to cover his mistake, just coasted and let Johnny May catch him. He let Johnny May catch him, and when Johnny May missed him, then Owen Farrell started to try and accelerate again.
Yeah, and on that, what's Johnny May doing? Like, an international winger trying to tap tackle a hooker that he could have just caught up with.
25 yards from the line.
Oh my word.
Three more steps and you jump on his back and it's game over.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
And there was other examples. The Johnson try, which was brilliantly taken. Yeah. Which really should have been. That deserved to be the match-winning try.
It did, didn't it?
But England's team kind of either not bothering to track back, so not bothering to have the defensive line in the first place, and then not bothering to track back, and the missed tackles, the kind of, you could play the Curb Your Enthusiasm music again. No, that's not that one. The Daily Noel fiasco of confusing each other. Yeah,
I happen to know the cameraman that Daily. When he collided
with.
Well, yeah, and he looked like he did so with, like,
he dropped the shoulder.
He dropped the shoulder in on him. I mean, ordinarily you'd think a player might sort of swerve or step. Daly went, no.
Straight through him.
Bosh.
Now, cameramen are deceptively big people. Because they're carrying a lot of kit all the time. BT, you've got a camera guy in.
You've got a few who are big boys.
Yeah, who's the one who does Rugby Tonight? Looks like Robocop. Massive man. You know, they're adequately equipped to handle contact, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not sure a 15 and a half stone international winger running off the pitch into you is going to...
Yeah, he was going at some pace as well.
Yeah.
England... I mean, Scotland, fair play to them, because you wouldn't have been surprised had they been the ones who had turned their backs and had a beer, so to speak, after that first 28 minutes. But as Finn Russell said after the game, they kind of went away from their game plan of kicking the ball, like trying to get territory in possession, and just went for it and played everything from everywhere and amazingly found huge gaps.
Is this kind of the rugby version of the dangerous two-goal lead?
the dangerous 31-point lead with
well, no, it was actually
50 minutes left at home.
Yeah, yeah, it got to the point where it was like would have been like a 5-0 lead, and as you say, you're bored and like, oh, this is not really worth watching anymore. Have you got BMAC? Should we call BMAC?
Yeah,
because if we're talking about England Scotland,
yeah, let's.
Should we just see if BMAC's about? Do you want me to turn it off?
Have we got?
I'll down him from yours.
Okay, just give me a number. Oh, no, I was going to say tell me the number, but that wouldn't be a good idea. Dox him on a podcast. Just as you're doing that, and you just mentioned the Johnson try, the pass from Finn Russell, and not just the pass, did you notice the way he sold the he sold the deep pass with his eyes, and gave the flat pass. He sold me, and I was watching him do it. I was like,
yeah, yeah. Oh, this is out the back.
That's unreal, serious player.
JB,
can you hear him?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, how are you? You well?
Yeah, it's JB, Phil, and Timmy.
Hey, boys, how are you doing? You well?
Yeah, very well. We're just going to try and get Phil's headphones in, because otherwise he's not going to be...
And JB's headphones.
Are you sorted, Jay?
No, I'm not. You have to talk to Byron yourself.
All right, well, I'll talk to you for a moment then, Byron. We just thought we'd give you a buzz, because we're talking about the game yesterday. How are you feeling yesterday? How late was last night?
Last night was a late one. The celebrations went a long way, or should I say, it's early hours of the morning, but it was good fun.
Sorry, I'm just chucking JB some headphones. There you go. He said it was a late one anyway, gents, but I'm sure you could have worked that one out anyway. And you said celebrations. It must have been weird feeling, though, at full time, kind of really proud from where you came from, but then to have just missed out on that win would have been the most incredible comeback.
Exactly, yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. It was quite a weird one. We celebrated, but there was definitely a weird feeling about it, because we didn't actually win it with full of draw. I suppose we still take the cup back to Scotland, which is pretty awesome. Obviously, to claw back 31 points and then to be ahead with 3 minutes to go was quite exciting. And then obviously them scoring at the end, yeah, put a little bit of a dampener on the night, but hey, in the Six Nations, and there's a lot of positives to take from that second half, so we enjoyed it anyway.
You didn't like that,
sorry,
JB.
I didn't hear you there.
You didn't like that, Jay.
I was just saying, never mind.
What was the question, Jay?
What's the question? what was half time like?
To be fair, there was no shouting and screaming. I was just like, to be honest, it was quite hard to put into words what happened in the first half. Just pretty, nothing went our way. England playing really well, seemed a bit frantic out there, and then it's just about just sticking to what we've been training and what the coaches gave us a few precise messages, just pretty much areas where we can improve. And then we did it in the second half and obviously scored a few tries, which was pretty cool.
Come on, Byron. We want to hear about this.
We need to know
about this argument between the Finn Russell and Gregor. I'm sure it was obviously not an argument in an angry sense, but Finn wanting to grab the game by the scruff of the neck a bit.
To be honest, I've heard. I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know too much about it.
What
was the argument?
Well, Finn Russell said in his post-match interview, he just said, me and Gregor had a... Add a few words, because I wanted us to go for it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the argument was Gregor was telling him to look at the short pass and give the long pass, and he's saying, no, I need to look at the long pass and give the short pass. I think that's what it was.
Hey, to be fair, I have no idea what happened. I was sitting here at halftime and I was thinking, what the hell is going on here? That was my honest reflection on the first half. I didn't really pay too much attention to what they were talking about. But yeah,
now,
that's all I really have to say. So
pre-game,
you might
have mentioned that you had a secret strategy to beat England, which you drew. Good work. Can you reveal that now?
It's not so much a secret strategy. It's just there's no secret that England kicked the most in the Six Nations. So we identified that, and we thought, look, in the first 20 minutes, we'll take the game to them, and we'll enter a kicking battle with them. And it didn't work out too well. They just scored two really quick tries.
Yeah.
So then boys are just all over the place. And yeah, we really needed the half time, put it that way.
No,
just to try and get our head straight.
Just going back to Finn Russell. What's he like to train with? Is he that good just day to day?
Yeah, he's a different character. I don't think I've met a character like him. He's very laid back. He trains with his shoelaces untied. He's just so laid back. Always laughing, throws his passes. But he's a very smart player. He has a switch button where he does focus, think about the game. So a lot of people just see the side to him where he's just looks easygoing. Everything seems effortless. But he does actually put in the hard work too, you know, behind the scenes. So. He's brilliant.
Now, Byron, when can you talk me through that kind of the last 50 minutes of that game? Because England went 31-0 up, then McAnally scores the charge down try, and
it
looked as a kind of independent observer at that stage that was probably going to be nothing more than a consolation try, and then there was a couple more consolation tries. At what stage did you think, hang on, this is on. This is really on. Because I would imagine, kind of as you've said and as Finn said, at halftime going into that, it probably didn't look like there was much chance of winning the game.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we took a lot of courage and belief from the fact that just before halftime, we had quite a lot of good defensive sets. So our defence were like, okay, hold on, what they're throwing at us, we can handle. If we stick within our structures, if we stay connected, we get off the line together and make dominant hits, which we did the back end of the first half. And then obviously Stu McAnally's try was quite big for us in terms of we had just scored, go back into the half. We had a good defensive set in the last 10, 15 minutes. Stu McAnally's try, which was excellent for us. And then obviously starting the first half, we scored, I think, was it after 5 minutes or 6 minutes?
Yeah.
I think it's Magnus Bradbury's try. I remember at that point, I was like, flip sakes, I think we can win this. I think we can really, because at that stage, defensively, we didn't feel troubled, if that makes sense, even though they had scored 31 points in the first half. We like got comfortable with our defense, if that makes sense. And it felt like we still had so much more to offer on attack, and then we were scoring tries, and then, yeah, the belief was just growing.
Go on, Phil.
Yeah, just on that point. Now, is Stuart McAnally, is he the fastest hooker in world rugby? Is he the fastest hooker you've played with?
I'll tell you what.
No, Rob Webber is.
We got all the speed times today. He's quite a good speed, to be fair. But I reckon it's definitely got to be between him and Dan Coles.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Coles.
Dan Coles quite quick too, isn't he?
Yeah, he could play a... He could probably do a job at 12 or 13, couldn't he, Dane Coles?
Last question from me. Did you buy Tom Curry a beer after the game?
Did I have a beer with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. It was a good laugh, actually.
And the old Exeter boys, there's a fair few of them you got to catch up with as well.
Say again?
The Exeter boys you got to catch up with as well.
Yeah, so Jack Noel, Lucan, Dickie, Henry Slade and Tom Curry, we all had a good catch up and a few beers together in the corporate side of things upstairs after the game, which was good.
Whose jersey do you swap with after the game?
I've swapped with Henry Slade.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Nice touch.
Yeah, we're good mates. Good mates from the extra of the day. So we had a chat during the week. Said if we play, we'll swap jerseys. So yeah, we did that.
Oh, nice touch. Yeah, that was the first time. I couldn't believe this stat, Byron, but. You and your Scotland teammates were the first team ever to score 6 tries against England at Twickenham. Ever.
Is that right?
Ever.
That's amazing.
It's a bloody loose game. I've still not watched it back. I'm still busy just sitting on the couch and thinking, what happened?
Do you watch games back? Because like Johnny Wilkinson apparently has never watched the 2003 World Cup final because he wants the memories in his own head. He doesn't want them to be polluted by the TV. But... You must go back and watch it to dissect it as much as anything.
I haven't watched the games back, but I don't know. I definitely think I'll watch it at some stage. Although I've just been tagged in something on Twitter, all the player ratings, I got a 6.
What
rubbish!
No, to be fair, I didn't have too much ball in hand to attack. So they told me I was a bit like a pedestrian yesterday on attack.
Mate, well, I'm just thinking who was on your wing. Yeah, there wasn't a.
Jack Noel was on my opposite.
Yeah, and after 25 minutes,
he did nothing.
Well, he did nothing unless he went inside to get the ball. He didn't get anything on his wing.
Thanks, you make me feel better already. Thanks.
Well, Byron, it was great. It was absolutely brilliant to see you back in that blue jersey again.
So, thank you, bro. I really appreciate it. It was lovely being out there.
And when's the next episode of the MMA pod out?
Say again?
The MMA pod.
Yes. Oh, no, I've been off that for a while, obviously, because I was in camp, but some big upsets this weekend.
Yeah, Darren Till, eh?
Darren Till and Leon Edwards. I didn't foresee that. Did you see what happened with Masvidal and Edwards?
No, I've only seen the highlights of the Till fight.
Ooh, you want to see what happened backstage?
Oh, really?
Interesting drama, yeah. Big drama.
Well, Byron, it's a cracking to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call.
Welcome anytime.
Look after yourself, gentlemen.
Take it easy, Byron.
Cheers, Byron.
See you soon, mate.
Cheers.
Bye.
What a gent.
What a great lad.
Right.
One of my favourites.
I'll make a statement. You can discuss.
Okay.
I'll try and make it form it into a question.
Do your best, Tim. I know you're not good at that.
Everybody's been so overreactive to one bad half of rugby for England.
I think they've been underreactive.
Right, so on the sense that on the strength of that England game yesterday, everyone said Eddie Jones is useless, Owen Farrell needs to be dropped, Joe Cock and the singer should have been in, England are rubbish, they're never going to win a World Cup. And I actually go, it was a really bad half where they totally switched off, but they were also, that was the best any team played. It was awful, but before that, it was the best any team in the Six Nations has played.
Phil?
I am with you to a point. So I think that is a phenomenal example of two completely different performances within one game. It is probably the best 28 minutes of rugby that anyone played in the Six Nations, and it is probably the worst 50 minutes if you exclude the last two after 80.
Do you think it's better than the Ireland performance? I thought that was a genuinely great performance. I thought one of the best performances in maybe 3 or 4 years.
Those four tries in that first 28 minutes. It was so dominant. Now, the Ireland performance as a whole, as an 80 minutes, was better. But for the highs of that 28 minutes were higher than the Ireland performance when you condense it into the 28 minutes. Now, so that bit is definitely true. And the problem that I have with England is since downfall 2018 and the last Six Nations, a lot of England's games have been magnificent, incredible highs and these terrible, terrible, like, as an England fan, painful lows. Thinking back to the South Africa tour.
Oh.
So the South Africa tour, the first two games, England started like an absolute house on fire and played some brilliant rugby. And then for whatever reason,
they finished like a house on fire.
Yeah, they finished like a house on fire finishes. Like when the fire brigade hasn't got there and it's just some smouldering ash. That was exactly how they finished. But it's not, they are not the only games they've played like this. The New Zealand game, the first half an hour they played against New Zealand was absolutely spectacular. They were brilliant, and they finished it awfully. The Wales game, they played some great stuff early on and then kind of fell into this pattern of just kick every single thing away and hope that Liam Williams drops the ball.
Yeah, that's not a great bet to be making.
So my problem with all of this is this is not a one-off for England. And there's good things because the highs are not a one-off.
Yeah.
Their best stuff in the last 12 months has been magnificent, but their worst stuff has been
incredibly volatile.
Has been awful. And it's what is that? Because I I was trying to think back to all those games. When you look at the South Africa games in isolation, you can say altitude, and I would have said that. But having had all this additional information, particularly where it's not altitude, I don't know what the problem is. Now, in this game, if you look at it in isolation, I would say the game, they thought the game was over. Before the game, the tournament was already over. So I would forgive them for switching off. But the manner, and the two words I used before, the laziness and the arrogance...
Until Scotland had three tries, and then you go, hang on a minute.
Wake up again. Come on, guys.
Yeah, it's too late then. So I actually think, it won't surprise you here, but I think I've got the answer as to basically why they're...
Gatland and Cipriani?
Well, yes. I mean, I've got not only have I got the answer, I've got the cure too.
Well, yeah, so if you're saying Gatland and Cipriani, so what...
No, I didn't say that.
No. But, okay, so that would be an answer to the question. Oh, that would be the solution.
Yeah, so what is going wrong?
I think I've got it.
Which is, England are a collection of outstanding players. If you don't think England are a good team, well, you're just wrong. England are a brilliant team. They've got some great players. They've got best player pool in the world, blah, 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 blah.
They've got great players, yes. Are they a great team? Two different things.
Yes. So the way I describe them is hard to play against, because they are. I mean, they probably gave Wales the biggest test of the Six Nations, probably. So hard to play against, yes. Very easy to prepare for. In Eddie Jones's mind, he has a way of playing, and if the players don't win, it's not because his way of playing is wrong, it's because his players are mentally weak, or he needs a bigger ball carrier, or there's something wrong with the players not fitting into his system. I've spoken about that multiple times. But because of this lack of flexibility, which I've shown, when they get it right and they overpower teams, they are dominant because they are literally the best in the world at the things that they do. But the problem is those things can be easily countered. And that's why you're seeing they lose leads, they lost to Wales, who just all they needed was a DVD player. Well, okay, we'll just go around the fringes of the ruck then, because we will negate that the line speed. England, with the tiniest bit of variation, would be the best team on the planet, but they're not, and that's Eddie Jones's fault, and that's why you've got this horrible volatility when they can be amazing and potentially beat the All Blacks. But they'll also lose to anyone who's done any amount of research.
So, are you going back to saying they're only playing one way? They're only playing plan A?
Effectively. I mean, the change of personnel.
Because what is that plan A? Because I've probably seen three different plans in this Six Nations alone.
So, defensively, you basically know it's they're absolutely dominant in midfield, or at least they were. And I say dominant, I mean dominant with their collisions. That's what they're looking to do. Incredibly hard working. You do not want to run at England off the first receiver. You will get absolutely annihilated. But you can go around them. You can or you can go very, very narrow. That seems to work relatively well.
That's not a game plan.
No, but it's a defensive structure, right?
Well,
they kick more.
That's not a game. Talk to me about the game plan.
No, hang on. No, you're wrong there. Because if I know the defensive structure, I can then make a game plan to go against that defensive structure. So defensive structure is absolutely a game plan.
No, okay. Go on. So talk to me about their one way of playing.
Well, defensively, I've just done it.
Okay.
And I just feel, going forward, they sort of run out of steam. You know, it's such hard work which they've got to put in. And I think that it's the hard work element. It's volume of carries. It's big ball carriers. It's rather blunt. And then when they run out of steam, they run out of steam, and that's why they give up these leads.
So is that running out of steam? Is that just due to carrying?
I think it's the all round work rate which they have to put in.
So did they run out of steam after 28 minutes when they weren't doing heavy carrying? They weren't going for your game plan that you suggested a few weeks ago.
It's the overall effort. It's the tackles made. It's the constant getting
after,
to the
after
feet.
After 28 minutes?
It's everything.
After 28 minutes? Hardly making a tackle against Scotland after 28 minutes and they ran out of steam?
Well, I mean, that could be down to complacency. But then that period lasted then until 80 minutes.
That is true, but not for running out of steam.
Well, ideas?
That's
what I'm saying. They're hard to play against. They're easy to prepare for.
But
Gatland outsmarted Jones.
I agree with that. Completely agree with that. I just think the one way of playing is just wrong. And there was a Nick Evans article in The Guardian this week, which was highlighting the two ways of playing that they've played, excluding just kicking and using the big ball carries, which is one way of playing that you've alluded to, but also something I mentioned last week, which is the going wide and looking to isolate and identify weaknesses in the defensive line, which is the way that they started for the first 28 minutes. So that is not one way of playing.
Right. To be more precise on this, what I'm not saying is that they're inflexible. Like, they might come onto the field and say, right, today we're going to, you know, play wide, or today we're going to kick more. So yeah, they're all overall, you know, overarching ways that they can play differently. What I mean by they don't play differently is, if you look at, say, Wales, they will in-game change a tactic in order to exploit space.
So that,
and they'll be prepared with those tactics, and you don't get that from England.
So that is a very different point, but I do agree with that point. And that is actually, it's something that we've all spoke about in the past, and going back to the Fox Theatre performance a few years ago that highlighted, 100%. I don't think England have learnt from this.
No, I agree.
And the reason, so that I absolutely 100% agree with, and the lack of leaders is really worrying, and they are so reliant on Owen Farrell for everything that when he has a poor game, like he did from 28 minutes onwards, he had a very poor game, they are clueless.
And when he gets, and when he goes off the boil, he really goes off the boil.
Yeah, but that's not the point, because, you know, you wouldn't say Johnny Sexton should be dropped from Ireland's team. He had an absolute howler of a game.
He did.
And this is where we can sort of come together and find some common sense. I don't think it's that dire in terms of, I don't think the nuances of how England play is a problem that needs to be dissected. It's all in the top 2 inches. That's what caught them out with the Fox against Italy. That's what caught them out in, well, you could
Wales,
argue that against Wales, yes.
Massively.
Yeah, and that leadership issue. And we talked before about the 0-3 England team, and there's just no comparison when you look around the England 15. You'd actually, if Dylan Hartley isn't around the squad, you're suddenly going, who should we thrust into a captaincy position that has no experience of captaincy?
Yeah. Well, it's like the scrum half question. They have no depth at scrum half. Despite having so many scrum halves available to them, you really struggle to think, well, who are England going to rely on should Ben Youngs go down?
And that top 2 inches does manifest itself with Eddie Jones. And this is one place that I will criticise Eddie Jones. When you saw the way that Scotland approached that second half, it almost felt like Gregor Townsend was preempting where the game might go and was being proactive. Mm. So he threw on fresh men after 50 minutes to try and keep that intensity as they made their comeback. Eddie Jones seemed to wait, and was then trying to play catch-up.
Hoping that his players who started the game so well would somehow magically revert to playing as they
wonder,
did.
I wonder, you know, if Ireland are suffering from the same sort of thing, which is, if plan A doesn't work, if they are not on the front foot and they're doing all
and Murray and Sexton are not playing like Murray and Sexton,
then it just crumbles. And I think Wales are, you know, an example of teams of how you be tactically flexible.
So that, I completely agree with that point, and we'll come on to that game in a second. I'll just refer to a message that we've had earlier today from Patrick Tipsword, great name by the way.
Yeah, it is a great name.
It's a great name
on Twitter, who listens from Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. And I think we've actually answered this question, but he's raised the question from this game and the last few games is, why do England revert back to kicking the ball away constantly when they're out under scoreboard pressure? And I think this game was a great example in that second half when they weren't playing well and when Scotland had the wind in their sails. England seemed to, instead of reacting to what was in front of them and what the changing landscape around them, they just kind of reverted to that type. There was no leadership from Farrell, who did have a bad game in that last 50 minutes, and Ben Youngs and he just both kicked the game, poor kick chase.
Same as Wales.
Territory possession. And yeah, the Wales game is a great example.
And I don't think that's a reason to say Farrell should be dropped. Just like, I don't think it's a reason to say, I don't know exactly how you solve it, but those lessons can be learned.
I think I'd win more games with England than Eddie Jones. Genuinely.
Do you think Eddie Jones would win more games with Tok H than you have?
Nope.
Do you think he wouldn't get them promoted?
No, I doubt it. We've lost four games this year by an aggregate of 9 points.
Question, do you think you could have, in 2 years or 3 years, got a Japanese team to beat South Africa?
I would have employed Eddie Jones. So yes. Do you know what? The Japanese one is so interesting, and I wonder if there's some learning to be done here. But it's widely recognised that Japanese players would never like to work under Eddie Jones ever again. They're very grateful for what he did. But he had those boys pretty much as a full-time team for 6 months before the World Cup. And the way he brutalised them was, it's pretty epic if you read any of the accounts. I just wonder if that approach... Well, it's fine for the Japanese when you've got the players all the time. I just wonder if that approach doesn't really work with English professionals.
There you go.
Mm.
On to the Grand Slam winning game, unless you guys want anything else.
Just a couple of quick points. Having said in previous weeks, I was totally wrong. We were totally wrong. Hands up. Elliot Daly's a bona fide superstar international fullback. He was dreadful defensively.
He's so good going forward.
So good going forward.
But the whole team.
It's bizarre. But
I can't put my finger on it.
But for that reason, I think it's solvable. Because it isn't like you're not going, they don't have the talent, they can't play well, they can't score tries, they can't be defensively sound. They can.
They can do all of that.
A switch can be flicked. I don't know how it happens. Who knows if Eddie Jones is the right man to bring it out of them. But it can. I'm hopeful. I think, actually, despite what we saw, of all the Six Nations teams, I am most... This is going to come back. Right, clip, just make a note of the time and date that I said this. I'm most confident that England have what it takes to potentially win a World Cup out of all the Six Nations
teams. Potentially they could.
For the positives that they bring. Are devastating when they work.
But
have they learnt those lessons from 4 years ago? It feels like the same.
They will not change. They're incapable of change. That's what I think about them. And also, I'm not overly impressed with Eddie Jones's coaches either. What do you think of this? What about the "I think my players are mentally weak" comment?
Yeah, that I don't like that.
I like the honesty of it because they were in that game. If he's talking about in that game, were.
I put out a tweet.
They were.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think they'd say that.
Well, I don't know, but I put out a tweet earlier on today. And the tweet was partly tongue-in-cheek, partly not, but it's like, difference between Gatland and Eddie Jones. Gatland loses his Lions captain, not a problem. Domestic game in Wales is in turmoil, not a problem. Loses to Lupe Falatau, not a problem. Reece Webb goes to France, not a problem. Eddie Jones, on the other hand, says, my team's mentally weak. And that sort of encapsulates it. By saying the players are mentally weak, what he's saying is, I got this right, but if only my players... could think a little bit better, we would have won.
You're putting words in his mouth there. That was actually from a Five Live interview, and that was part of a bigger interview, and he wasn't throwing his players under the bus with that. He was just actually being refreshingly honest. And they were, in that game, they were mentally weak. You can't deny that.
Yeah, it comes from somewhere, though. It comes from somewhere. And I do blame him for... I think it's a cultural thing.
You love culture.
I love culture.
You love blaming culture. I think the fact that winning and losing.
The fact that 2015 was very, very similar. I don't know. Is there something bigger? Again, maybe we'll look after this year's World Cup and really bird's eye view it and say, is it something about the English
game, be it club game, isn't it? I don't know, because
we had this chat before the podcast.
Structure is an interesting one.
Yeah, structure is fascinating, isn't it? A few years, 6 months ago, you would say. We'd solve the structure problem. It's easy. You divide up all of your pro players into four different provinces. You have a player welfare thing. You only let them play, two games a season for a club. You've got the Ireland team. Well, we fast forward now. Ireland looked completely inept this weekend.
Yeah, I guess maybe this ties into that whole... This is a conversation for another time, but maybe it ties into that whole relegation conversation where you actually say, does the nature of the Premiership having relegation means that players play in a certain teams play in a certain way and it's very structured and rigid, mm-hmm.
and they'd rather get South African men kicking, and clearly what they need to do in England is they
need to tell every player in England that their contract is up for renegotiation and all the clubs might merge and then cancel the merge the day after.
So Northampton and Leicester are going to merge,
that's right. Saracens Harlequins.
Can you imagine that, by the way? Wow.
Yeah. So
we're going to do a southwest of Exeter, Bath, Bristol, perfect. And Gloucester.
Perfect. And then cancel it all.
Yeah.
And then they would win. So, yeah. Anyway, Wales.
Yes.
Wales.
And obviously, not to overshadow, I hope there was enough light being shone on Scotland's contribution to a...
I think so. We had an amazing
game. It was amazing.
It was a phenomenal performance. And Finn Russell, who... He didn't play particularly well last week. He didn't play very well for the first 20 minutes this week. He was unbelievable. Yeah. It shows why, because he is one of the best paid players in the world at Racing Metro. He's filled the shoes of Patrick Lambie, Johan Usen, and Dan Carter.
And then some, probably.
By taking that role. So I don't know how much he's on. It'll be a lot of money. It is fully justified when he puts in
his
performances
Wikipedia
like that.
Page said after the game, Finn Russell is a Scottish rugby union player, standoff, plays club rugby for Racing 92, also acted as Scotland head coach at halftime in the England-Scotland Six Nations game. And I've learnt my lesson about writing tweets before full-time as well.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Did you write?
I wrote one of those tweets. My tweet this time was, William Wallace, Taggart, Ewan McGregor, Taggart. Calvin Harris, Carol Smiley, Rod Stewart, Duncan Bannatyne, The Proclaimers, Jeanette Cranky, Susan Boyle, Dominic Diamond, Darius from Pop Idol, Cornell Dupria, WP Nell, Gary Graham. Your boys took a hell of a beating.
Cornell Dupria.
Never did send it.
You actually, in fair and independent broadcasting, you should have written one for England on the 82nd minute when they were losing at home.
No, I was too upset by then.
Amazing.
Right, Grand Slam winners. Well done, Wales.
I'm going to tell you exactly why one of the men coaching is the best coach probably we've seen coach in the UK, but only after Tim tells you about the top I'm wearing.
Well, I'll tell you about two things. Firstly, I'll tell you to go and get a razor from Cornerstone. They are fantastic. We have more amazing compliments this week to our Twitter page, at Rugby Podcast, for people that we've introduced to Cornerstone. They are a mail-order razor company. They were there before all of these other pretenders. They're the ones that give you a weighty aluminium shaft engraved with your initials, which you can get for free with an order of 6 precision-engineered Cornerstone razors in a presentation box delivered to your door for just £4. It's a no-brainer. Give it a go. You'll love it. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Or...
Egg 10 at checkout.
And whilst you're in a mood where you want to treat yourself to something, why not go to our Egg Chasers Club Shop, and you could purchase yourself a wonderful jersey.
We've got Club Shop. That's cool, isn't it?
The one that JB is sporting right now on our YouTube channel.
I am in the merino wool supporters top.
Merino wool. That's the stuff that keeps you.
That's exactly
cool
it
when it's hot and warm when it's cold.
Yeah, incredible. And we've got this, and we've got the playing top. So the playing top suitable for rugby.
Phil, if you look like Phil, you can wear the match.
If you look like me, you probably want the merino wool one. So that is
what's the website for that?
akumashops.com/eggchasers.
akumashops.com/eggchasers. And other product lines to be added soon. But
well, there's a couple of options for your better half as well. A couple of ladies.
Mother's Day next weekend.
And, you know, they want all mothers want to dress like podcasters. That's a fact, I think.
Well, you can share your love of rugby with them. What's the stat? Is there women's jerseys as well?
There is.
Two women's jerseys.
A semi-fit, as it's called, or pro-fit type jersey, and the subliminated, supporters jersey, shall we call it?
Yes.
Well, one thing you could do is perhaps buy them. Like, I reckon, like, there's nothing better than seeing your missus in wearing one of your shirts. It's oversized. It's when they, yeah, you know, come on. So there you go. Or buy them a jersey that you can wear that she can
exactly
have.
Exactly. Although these Egg Chasers jerseys are so valuable, I would not lend mine to anyone. So unlucky.
So come on. Looks very good, Jay.
It does look wonderful.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, Grand Slam winners.
Grand Slam winners.
I think, is it safe to say we have got probably the best coaching talent the Northern Hemisphere has seen maybe ever in Warren Gatland, though?
So, this is an interesting question. Because
does three or four Grand Slams trump a World Cup?
Well, yes. I mean, Sir Clive is up there for me, definitely. But Sir Clive's not got Heineken Cups. He's not got Premiership titles. You know, and the Lions Tour took some gloss off what he did. I mean, you can never forget he won an amazing World Cup.
Yeah.
And the best thing about that World Cup is he was meant to do it. There's nothing better than when teams are meant to do it and they actually pull it off. So... yes, him and Gatland, I think, are basically the two best coaches that we've ever seen in the Northern Hemisphere.
I would add Schmidt to that. In the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, maybe.
So he's been 6 years with Ireland, has won three tournaments.
Yep, that's pretty good. So that's half of the tournaments he's won.
Yes, yeah. This year was a very poor performance, but if you'd gone back... for three of the last 5 years before that, he won 3 out of 5.
Yep.
And before that, he was, if you're talking about Heineken Cups, he was winning Heineken Cups with Leinster. So I think he has to be, he's not got the longevity that Gatland has, and he's not done it on the Lions stage. He's not been given the chance. But he is very, very impressive as well.
Well, I mean, why isn't Joe Schmidt getting the stick that Eddie Jones is getting?
So I think he is getting some in Ireland.
I think Ireland.
I think both are unjustified. But the worst.
Oh, I don't think he should be. I was just comparing and contrasting.
Yeah. Well, so I would say he's not getting the stick from Ireland because the Irish are still in somewhat a state of shell shock. Not being good is something very new to them. There's a whole generation of Irish fans now who probably don't remember not being very good. So this is like when Eddie Jones lost a couple of games last Six Nations, and we're like, oh, well, it's just a blip. No, it's not. Now, I don't think Ireland is a blip. Sorry, I think Ireland is a blip. And if he carries on losing, he will get the same stick as Eddie Jones. And the danger for Ireland, so we should talk about this later. Now we've seen these teams in the flesh, in battle, who actually is... best equipped for a World Cup going forward. And the worry for Ireland is there's video now. There's really good ways to beat Ireland and teams can watch it. So they're probably in a worse position than they were at the start of Six Nations.
Although you chuck in at, well, it's the same with any team, but you change the world's best fly half for the world's best fly half playing like an average fly half or a poor fly half in the game against Wales.
Well, just do what Wales do. You pick a poor fly half.
You take the best, or if not, like maybe with Aaron Smith a year ago, vying to be the best scrum half in the world, and exchange them for a very average looking scrum half, and put them in an international arena against a good team. It changes the dynamic, and I think Colm Grimes. We have got some good listeners. Listen to our podcast. He's tweeted to at Rugby Podcast and said, over 140 rucks per game, offloads not permitted, 4,000K of intensity, 100% accuracy and no penalties, Ireland's game plan, unstoppable when it can be done, impossible to maintain.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, that's exactly how I would sort of think about England's game plan.
And very, very difficult to maintain in the wet for Ireland.
Yeah, God, I wasn't sure whether I was watching Grand Slam or Grand Designs. I've never heard so much chat about a roof.
Well, with hindsight, it is very easy. But looking back, you just say, Joe, why do you go for the roof open? Why play that game plan with the roof open?
And I think that, going back to your point, JB, and also tying in with what Colm Grimes said there, and it did highlight what you've already said and what, yes, I will 100% credit Wales with, adaptability. The weather changed, Wales dealt with it, Ireland didn't.
Yep.
And I think the way... So, in some respects, I think Wales is... What is a very simple game plan is more suited to being used in any condition that the Six Nations is likely to throw at you. And by that, I mean when it's cold and wet, that Welsh game plan is it's phenomenally effective. It has been phenomenally effective. Apart from the first half against France, it has been phenomenally effective. Now, the flip side of that is they lost George North with 15 minutes, which you say losing a winger,
yep,
with 15 minutes gone, losing a winger is not a major thing, except when your back three cover is your fly half,
yep,
and you bring your reserve fly half and put your fly half to 15 and put your 15, who has been phenomenal in the wet as a 15,
and what does Gatland
onto
say?
The wing.
Not a problem.
And those players just, if anything, they played better, even more comfortable in that position.
I thought it was a little early to be closing out the game.
With Bigger coming on.
What's interesting about Wales, what I always remember, and this is... What I always remember when I was young and playing against Welsh teams, and when you played school rugby against Welsh teams, or you played representative rugby against any team from Wales, or you went to tournaments where there were Welsh teams, always, and senior rugby when we used to go on tour a lot, pre-season tour, whenever you played against Welsh teams, there was this, the rugby brains, the way that they traditionally have always played, it's in the blood there, it's... there's that flair, and that you don't see as much in the way of flair now these days with Wales, you in the way that you always did, but what there always has been is this understanding of the game, sort of rugby intellect.
Yeah, in that respect, you know, you're talking more of the James Hooks than the Dan Biggers.
Yeah, yeah, but that rugby intellect,
yeah.
I think...
Also, hard men. Don't forget that.
Oh, no.
Very hard men.
Oh, my God. The size of some of the packs that I used to bloody play against. Oh, my God. But I think that rugby intellect has been there traditionally in Wales, and has been is partly what you're talking about. I don't think it's all Warren Gatland saying that they're adaptable. I think you have players with really good rugby brains who can read situations and understand what's required.
Now, I don't want to go over the same points every week, the same ones every week, but I still can't get my head around Warren Gatland creating a team. I mean, Joe Smith's an amazing coach with an amazing team. Warren Gatland just has to pick guys and they come good. Thomas Francis absolutely dominated at scrum time. He's now a bloody important player. How did that happen?
He's
hitting more rocks than anyone else. How did that happen?
Navidi!
No, Josh Navidi.
What?
I did not see him phenomenal.
Being that good.
He is so good. Like, last week I was like, yeah, he's like ridiculously strong. His energy is great. And do you know who Navidi reminds me of? And it warms my heart. Mark Wilson for England. Like, a guy who everyone thought, yeah, solid club player. Yeah, don't really give him a shot at international level. Give him a shot at international level. And the guy's a beast. Like, he's just designed for that stage. And it just makes you think, how many other guys are out there who could do this if only the coaches gave them a chance? Anscombe, they would have to be a plane disaster with every Premiership fly half on before England played Anscombe, I would suggest. And yet, he was excellent. Kicked 7 out of 7. Actually, he played on the wing, most of it. But, you know, his 10 minutes of fly half were very good.
Well, that chip, that first 2 minutes, minute and a half of rugby, could not have been a more perfect start for Wales.
No.
It was clearly a planned kick to go deep and go for Stockers, try and hit him with two men, get him to pick up the ball near the touchline, try and force him into touch, which they did perfectly. Then the line out, couple of phases, and it was clearly
great line out as well.
Really well executed line out in those conditions.
Well, on the line out in general, you called it, Phil, that Wales will be targeting that because Ireland have looked a bit weak, and they absolutely
I said the other way round. I said Ireland, and I thought,
oh no, oh my God, you're right.
I said, yeah, I called it the wrong way round. I said, Ireland will be targeting
the line out still, Wales. I mean, they're still a little shaky.
They were,
but that one came off, and that's important.
Yeah, and I was thinking pre-match, So pre-match, I was speaking to an Irish friend of mine who was at the game, and I was saying, I think Ireland are going to do this. I really think, and one of the reasons, there's lots of reasons, but one of the reasons why I thought that was Ty Byrne getting selected. Mm. And I thought, that Welsh lineup has been struggling, and Ty Byrne and Peter O'Mahony are just going to read it, disrupt it. Wales are going to get no ball. And it completely wrong on that, completely wrong on so many things about this game. But that first, it was like Gatland had scripted that whole first 2 minutes. This is what you're going to do here, 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 and here. And it's going to see Hadley Parks slide in under the posts.
Because the fullback's going to be a tiny bit too wide.
Yeah.
And I mean, chipping it in you in the opposition 5 metre line or whatever the hell they were. They were very, very close to the opposition line. Pretty risky stuff.
What happened next, I would never have scripted, because it was only a couple of weeks ago and Hadley Parks looked really off the pace and like he was running in treacle.
Oh my God.
But that tackle on Stockers.
Yeah.
I was 100% certain that was a try.
Yeah.
When he hands off, it was Gareth Davis, wasn't it? Who himself is no slouch. Hands off Gareth Davis, right, he's in. He's in.
I hate players like Hadley Parks. Purely because I just can't pigeonhole him as anything.
Because he's everything.
Yeah, because he's strong going forward, but he's not as strong as Jamie Roberts.
No.
You know, he can pass the ball about, but not as well as some other players.
Yeah, like, he's not like a Henry Slade.
Exactly. What is he? He's brilliant.
He is, but he does every single thing that an inside centre should do, 90%+ as well as any inside centre. He just doesn't do any of them. He's not the best in the world at any one thing.
He isn't, is he?
But he does everything as well as anyone, or almost as well as anyone can possibly do it.
Yeah.
He's such a good all-round. And he is so important to the way that Wales have played this year.
Do you want to hear the downsides?
Before you do that, I just want to say the one that everyone knew already was massively important to Wales, was just about the best in the world, but Alan Wynne-Jones, oh my God.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Brokeback Mountain music.
I don't have music, sorry.
We need to get the Brokeback Mountain music again, because not since Jack Berger have I felt the urge to... not since Jack Berger retired have I felt the urge to fire up the Brokeback Mountain music for anyone.
He was amazing.
He is.
What amazes me about him is at the age of, what is he, 33?
Yeah, something like
that. 120 odd caps under his belt. He plays...
Is he old? I keep thinking he's young.
He might be younger than that.
I think he's 30.
He's 33.
Is he?
He will be 34 just the week before the World Cup.
He plays 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and is absolutely desperate the whole 80 minutes. Like, who was it who made the break? Was it Josh Adams made a break? Alan Wynne-Jones was like on his shoulder, busting a gut, coughing up a lung just to keep up with him.
And he got injured too. He got injured and they strapped him up.
I know. I was worried. And then he made... An incredible carry about 10 minutes after that. I thought when George North goes down, when Alan Wynne-Jones goes off, you reshuffle your whole back line because George North goes off. I thought this is not looking good. Even though Wales were 7-0 up at that stage, I thought Ireland are going to come back into this. Ireland are just too good
and they've got
in these conditions.
Falatau, potentially Reece Webb, Reece Patchell to come back in the squad, Aaron Shingler,
Shingler.
Lee Halfpenny.
Yeah.
They've got options. Someone told me today, and I don't think he knew what he was talking about, but I'll give him benefit of the doubt and say he does. Reece Webb potentially available for the World Cup. What's the story here? Is he going to...
There's been a lot of noises because his wife and kids have moved back, and he seems to be angling to try and make a move back just to make him eligible.
But he doesn't need to move back. He just needs to be offered a contract to come back.
Not many Welsh... Is there a thing about Welsh players not being able to settle elsewhere?
It's quite a lot, isn't it? We have touched on this. I think. Because you had Lydia over there who didn't succeed. Charteris has done all right, actually, wherever he's gone.
Charteris did.
Well,
okay.
They got relegated.
Yeah.
And they went to Racing. He's done all right.
Jamie Roberts liked it.
Yeah.
But came back.
But you're all right. They don't settle well.
Lee Halfpenny hated it.
Yeah. JD2 hated it. That's why he came back. What was I saying about who?
I can't remember. You were going to tell us why it was bad.
Oh, yeah.
What the bad news is.
Well, the bad news is, Alan Wynne-Jones is the bad news, effectively. What if he's not available for a semi-final or a final or a quarter-final?
Just slot in the next guy.
Who
would have said Adam Beard?
Adam Beard, monster of a man.
Because he looks like a dweeb when you just see a headshot.
Yeah.
He's absolutely enormous.
But do you know who he reminds me of? Luke Charteris.
Well, he's got bigger rump than Charteris, but the way he swims through the rooks and was disrupting Ireland's rook Ireland's driving maul is so well organised and so well disciplined normally, and he just kind of barged through the middle and just wraps everyone up.
Yeah, he's bloody good. But, you know, it does worry me that they are very reliant on Alan Wynne-Jones, if not actually for what he does, just for the leadership and the mentality.
Which is interesting to me, because I remember 2 or 3 years ago when Warburton, surprise, was injured for a Six Nations, and Alan Wynne-Jones was captain. There was a game against Scotland where I think up in Murrayfield, and Scotland beat Wales with Alan Wynne-Jones as captain. And he was... That game, I thought he will never be captain material, which is weird to say about Alan Wynne-Jones, but he was like meek and mild-mannered, didn't know how to speak to the referee properly, and just looked completely out of place in that role. But since he has stepped up properly to the full-time role, he's been phenomenal.
You would if it was battles were done like they were, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, and he was fronting a Celtic tribe, and each tribe put their best man forward. You just look at him and go, yeah, see it.
Well, he's like one of the special...
We'll do one. Take our women, yeah. Pillage our homes. I'm off.
He's like one of the special characters out of Game of Thrones he's inexplicably strong, great at fighting with swords, that kind of thing. He's amazing. Josh Navidi's also amazing. I just want to go back to Josh Navidi.
Josh Navidi, phenomenal.
I just love how strong he is.
This game, so I watched this game slightly one-eyed.
Hoping Ireland would win.
Massively hoping Ireland would win.
Yeah, obviously.
Mm. And I was getting a little bit frustrated. I don't know if you two were similar. Jay, you probably weren't. But I was getting a bit frustrated when I was wearing my Ireland hat at some of the referee decisions.
Oh my goodness.
I thought some of them were atrocious.
Some of Angus Gardner, friend.
I know. Our mate Angus. I don't like criticising referees in general. I would say...
Sealing off, I don't think was a good call.
I'd say the England-Scotland game, but I mean, both sides did it, but both defensive lines were miles offside the whole game.
Yeah. But he did call...
And if the referee lets you get away with it, of course you get away with it.
Yeah. But he did ping Ireland for offside.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was talking about Scotland, but Angus Gardner in this game, well, a couple of things. The thing that cheesed me off the most that he didn't get a grip on, and Wales, fair play, did it brilliantly, they chewed the hell out of that clock. And, oh my God, they bought a load of reset scrums because they knew they were chewing the clock down.
Smart, aren't they?
Very smart.
Very smart. So smart. It wouldn't have mattered.
I'd have been applauding England players for doing it, so if I was Welsh, I'd have loved it. Absolutely. But the referee didn't stop it.
There was a few things. It was... So the inconsistency was, when I was watching it, was what frustrated me.
Oh, yeah.
And it was almost like there was so much inconsistency that when he did give a penalty to Wales, he was almost like saying, yeah, look, Ireland, I am giving penalties against them as well, if that makes sense. But there was two that I'd point out, both of which...
The off-the-ball one was bad.
Well, so there was a not-straight line-out that was completely unnecessary. There was the off-the-ball one. There was two... really clear, in my mind, clear inconsistent application of the law that resulted for two kickable and kicked penalties for Wales. One was CJ Stander lying in the ruck. When Alan Wynne-Jones did it in front of the 10 yards out from the Wales sticks, he was lying in front of there, and Gardner gave... Oh, he's trapped in there, so it's only a scrum island.
When CJ Stander did it,
immediate penalty.
Yeah.
And there was the penalty just at the end of the first half, which was a collapse scrum when the ball was already out of the scrum, and collapse scrum to Wales, and he gives a kickable penalty.
Yeah, there was one.
And there was one for Ireland, which was exactly the same in my mind, and I'm not a scrum expert, that he just said, oh, play on, use it.
One scrum he got absolutely bang on, but the Wales players thought it was against them. It was which one was that? That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the Liam Williams one. So Johnny Sexton gives away the penalty, right? Angus Gardner blows. I'm pretty sure Liam Williams knows he's up to no good. He's like, sir, because he knows he's been caught for something, but he hasn't been caught. It's Sexton. So it's the reaction of Williams that makes me think, right, he's got that wrong. It's clearly Williams that's illegal.
It's really interesting. You don't know if it's a chicken or egg, whether those sorts of decisions led to the frustration or whether... Ireland aren't very good at playing the referee, and that didn't help them.
But they are in the past. Those boys, Omani, yeah. Byrne,
you're right.
Furlong, Sexton, Murray, they all know exactly how to play a referee.
Best as well.
They're so experienced.
They've got a great guy to go through, and they should do that.
They're so experienced.
So I don't know whether, and it's something, Ireland have always been very chopsy at refs, and it's annoyed the hell out of me in the last couple of seasons.
Same as they were damn bigger.
They were really bad yesterday, and I wonder if what you're talking about is part of it. Yeah, they were just getting more and more wound up.
At the end of the day, I was wearing that, saying all that with kind of wanting Ireland to win to make the England game more interesting. But even if you took all that off, Ireland did not play well at all.
Well, they nearly got nilled.
The way that they played and the number of basic errors from their absolute key go-to men, from that 8-9-10 combination, they all had terrible games and made basic errors.
Who was the other team they were garbage against?
They were not good against Italy.
Was it Italy or France? Yeah, maybe they didn't get a
bonus
off.
Point against Italy. They were poor.
Yeah. They weren't good against Italy. But then, bonus points. Who needs bonus points? Wales?
Nope.
No, didn't need them. Well, we thought it was going to be the first year that you'd need the Grand Slam bonus points.
Not according to Gatland. Gatland's law. He wins everything.
So before we get into the shamble fest that was Italy v France. Here's a 15. You can disagree as I go through. A team of the tournament.
Okay.
One, Rob Evans.
Yep.
Two, I was kind of torn because I thought Jamie George has actually been really good this tournament, and Ken Owens. I couldn't pick, so I put them both, so you can decide.
Ken Owens.
I think maybe McAnally for his
do you know what?
50-metre run.
It's not a bad
shot. He didn't do a huge...
Ken Owens has been
solid besides that. Yeah,
Ken Owens.
If anything happens to Alan Wynne, he's the next one up as captain.
Three, Carl Sinclair or Demba Bamba?
I go Sinclair.
Sinks.
Because I think Sinks...
I'd go Thomas Francis, and that's not even a joke either.
Thomas Francis for most improved player, definitely.
It's a bit of a backhanded compliment.
It is. Yeah. Sinclair's handling has been very
Gatland
important.
Gatland picks Sinks in his squad, so... four Cruz, five Alan Wynne, six Navidi, seven Curry, eight Parise.
No, Parise can go.
I thought he's been great.
So we'll come on to this because I think this is a good example of when you say England have got the best players, but they've not got the best team.
Mm-hmm.
Parise is a good example of that. Parise was magnificent, but he contributed to Italy losing. So we got man of the match. Despite him being a key component in Italy not winning that game.
Interesting.
Okay, so we can discuss that one in a second. Nine Dupont, 10 Russell, 11 May. I couldn't decide 12. It was like there wasn't a standout character.
What? Had the box?
Well, no. In a couple of the games, he was really, really bad in at least one game. But no, Hadley Parks.
Give it Hadley Parks
and JD, and Penno and Williams.
Yep. Pinot, definitely. Yeah.
Pinot is ace. I love Pinot.
Pinot's brilliant.
I would just go back and say honourable mention for Gareth Davis, who I just think is so good now.
Yeah.
He comes in for so much stick, but the energy he brings, and he looks great.
Honourable mention for Slade as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He hasn't hit the heights of that first game. Well, no, that's not right. He played great against France.
And he played brilliantly for 28 minutes against Scotland, as everyone did. That offload out the back of the hand.
Beautiful, isn't it?
So good.
That was so cheeky.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've got another question for you. Just give me the winners and losers from this. Who do you think, which teams have come out this in credit? Which teams are best set up for the World Cup? Because it's clear for me, there's one team that's a huge winner and the others not so much.
What worries me is that England could well play Wales in a quarterfinal, and if they play against any good team in a World Cup and switch off for 15 minutes even.
They're done.
Yeah, and that's what worries me, and that was the case in 2015, and it's still the case today.
Nothing will be as glorious as watching England go on in the group stages at home in the home World Cup. Nothing.
We back ourselves at home.
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. But I think, actually, probably most... I don't want to say this in a patronising way, but one of the teams that's benefited most from this tournament, and they finished fifth... It's actually Scotland, because they've been forced into getting guys who wouldn't have played game time and experience of big games.
Scotland's a good
one.
And
they have eventually 100%. Come good.
Yeah. 100%. And go back 2 years and Gatland did it more by choice as well as being forced into it, but that's exactly what Gatland did.
Yep. And still doing it now.
Still doing it now, but that's what Gatland did. And I think you're right, it will serve Scotland well. They won one game and came fifth, though. So
yeah,
you got to balance the two.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Ireland, I've said before, there's game tape on how to beat them now. They will not be happy about this, and they will get beat more because of that. Same for England.
But you can know what they're going to do. But if they have Murray and Sexton, world class.
Yeah,
and if Peter
you can't stop them.
And if Peter Ormoni's got his invisibility cloak on,
yeah,
and the ref isn't pinging the Ireland team for everything,
and Tadhg Furlong is suddenly rampaging with the ball,
exactly.
You can't stop them, even if you know what's going to happen.
And so
there's that. So they're in a less good position, I think, than before. England, I think, are in a less good position for the same reason as Ireland. I think Wales have managed to disguise what they do very well. But the team I would most like to be at this point, France, going forward to World Cup, is France. Because we have no idea.
We do have no idea what I don't like about France. They've showed glimpses of being very good. I mean, they were not good against Italy.
They weren't.
But
do you know what I loved? Uje scoring.
I know. Uje sliding
he's
in.
He's so good. He's so
but they've
such a creep.
I think now they know their best team. Or at least I think now they know their best halfback combination.
I hope not. But yeah, and Entermat had moments of goodness.
Uge was brilliant and awful.
Yeah,
and evil.
They've got to stick with Bastro, I think.
Bastro's done nothing.
Yeah,
Bastro has done nothing.
As I said it last week, if Bastro is the answer, you're asking the wrong question. And that's
correct.
From someone that doesn't even ask questions sometimes.
Correct.
Bastro is great. Bastro is still a great player.
So one thing, you know, when England took apart Ireland and said, here's why you need to be worried.
Mm-hmm.
Now Wales, here's why you need to be worried. Six Nations was played in certain conditions at a certain time of year.
Mm.
In Japan, in September, October, it will be hot and dry.
Will it?
Most likely, yeah.
Ooh, I had no idea. I assumed it was going to be cold, like Northern Hemisphere weather.
Well, it's Northern Hemisphere, but it's quite far south.
Hmm.
That's a fantastic point, Phil.
That this Welsh game plan would not necessarily... I'm not saying it wouldn't work, but we haven't necessarily seen it work in the kind of conditions that we'll see in Japan.
Mm.
And actually, when you mentioned before about the flexibility of Ireland, now, Ireland did not show any flexibility. They did not play well at all in this tournament. But Ireland in the last couple of years, when they've beat New Zealand, which they've done twice in the past 3 years, those two games were in markedly different conditions. So they beat them in Dublin in a 15-9 or whatever it was, very close arm wrestle of a game with a bit of magic from Stockers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat him in that crazy game in 28-degree heat in Chicago when it was a 38-31 scoreline.
Interesting.
So while they've not shown it now, we do know this team has it in them, because if they can get Lama, Stockers, Ringrose all running, they can do things.
And to sort of back that up, I don't want to discredit the brilliance of Wales and the collective, the unity, the intelligence, the game awareness and game management. They struggle to score tries.
But if they can bring it down to that arm wrestle...
They do struggle to score tries.
Yeah, they massively... But if they can bring it down to that arm wrestle, then there are a few teams yeah, better. There are no Northern Hemisphere teams better. It's if they can keep it at the arm wrestle when you've got faster, drier, hotter conditions.
Mm. So if I understand what you're saying, and that people aren't expecting anything, and that makes France dangerous. But I think actually there was a real clear split. There were three good teams, three poor teams in this Six Nations tournament over five rounds.
Overall,
Scotland had an amazing 50 minutes, but
yeah, Scotland played some great stuff, and they played well against Wales in that second half, but couldn't convert it. Just on the Italy France game, Italy. So I said it before. Parise got man of the match, probably deserved man of the match. Apart from Pino, he was the best man on the pitch. But some of the decision making and some of the execution decision making from him, but execution from the whole team with him as their leader and him driving that pack, it was not good enough at this standard. And it's, he was magnificent when you look at it as an individual performance, but when you look at that as a team performance, leadership of a team performance, it was lacking. And I love Parise, and I'm disappointed to say it, but they should have won that game.
Oh my they word! Had,
is there anyone you'd less want to be than Italy's 13 this weekend?
Oh,
what a horror show! Like,
he's a young lad as well.
Don't get me wrong; they've beaten France before, so it's not like it'd be a first for them. But he's running into the corner. Well, first of all, he just needs to catch the ball. I mean, that's the only thing.
When the post,
yeah, and you can always see him planning a celebration. It's the easiest try that you'll ever score. Except for the other try he misses, which is the easiest try that you'll ever score.
That is the easiest try. Now, Penaud, that was a hell of a tackle.
Yeah.
And to get across, but he's carrying it his right arm, not his left arm. And that is, so he had so many ways he could have scored that try. He could have stepped in, he could have passed the ball, he could have carried it in his left hand, he could have dived earlier and hit the line rather than carry it, like being almost full height when he goes over the line.
Yeah, it's basic because an NFL running back takes the ball and then
4 points of contact.
And then it's like
3 points, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 points of contact. Your chest is in contact with the ball and both hands are in contact with the ball, and it's not going anywhere.
But kids are taught, if you're going in at the corner, if you're running with a player coming like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, change hands.
Left hand. And then you've got the option of a fend, but even if you don't have a fend, the ball is as far away as it possibly can be from the defender.
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't win. There's some lovely moments in that Giraldini looked in a bad way, looked injured.
His knee, was sad to see.
But the French guy's going over and giving him a little rub on the head, and then him sitting on the sideline practically in tears with like emotion, willing his Italian team to go and win. How did they not win?
How did England not win?
Well, I know, if you took the scoreboards away from, we've said this before with some of these Six Nations matches, if you took the scoreboard off and just watched the game without the tries, you would not have predicted.
Yeah, the territory and possession.
Certainly,
that Italy
Italian
had
one
so much great territory and great possession inside France's 22, and just couldn't get over the line. I mean, they got over the line several times, in fact. They just only scored one of them from Tito Tibaldi. I mean, he himself got over the line at least a couple of times. But, I mean, they would rue. There was a miss kick by Tommaso Allan. I think it was just inside the second half, but I might be wrong about that. But they turned down points on probably three or four occasions in the first half and a couple of occasions in the second half where they were kickable penalties. And it would have made a massive difference because France wouldn't have scored that last try. Or if they had, Italy would have been ahead when you go into that last play.
It was like I've used this analogy before, but it was like Douglas Haig. Italy were like Douglas Haig in World War One, sending all their men, like battalion after battalion, into the enemy defences. Yeah, like getting a little bit of territorial gain and then ended up getting walloped back where they just came from.
Well, I'll tell you what's weird about France. Like, so when South Africa was struggling, they called up Brendan Venter. And they said, Brendan, we need some exits. So Brendan Venter showed up and did some exits. Exits are important. They're fundamental. I've never seen a team literally have no idea of how to exit up. Like, they're a remarkably good defensive team, which I know sounds bizarre for a team that's conceded so many points. But when you can't exit and all you're doing is defending in your own 22, they're really good at that.
You better be good at it.
Yeah.
If you're just giving the ball back to the opposition.
You just stand there getting hammered. Like, they got battered against Ireland. They couldn't exit. But they were defending their line bloody well until the last, about 30 minutes in.
Meanwhile, Georgia won the Rugby Europe Championship.
Grand
Slam. Well, no, let's save that for our other pod.
We're not doing another pod, are we?
Yeah, just a quick one that's all on right. All the rugby news of the week, because there's some interesting stories that are flying around. This is just a purely Six Nations one. So, I'll make a statement and see whether you agree or disagree. this Six Nations was far worse quality than last year.
Disagree. Different.
It was definitely different.
I'm being a little bit, hyping it up a little bit just to make the point. I think it was a bit worse quality than last year. But it was a little bit more boring, mainly because the defences were on top.
Yeah.
And the attacks weren't as good as they have been.
Well, I would say, before the Six Nations, we were hyping up as the best Six Nations ever.
Yeah.
Because the quality of the three teams that we've mentioned,
and Scotland being real contenders,
Scotland,
and
yeah,
France, if they just get their act together.
Now, yeah, we fast forward, and I wonder if maybe it's not as exciting as because we were actually right, and all these teams took each other to pieces.
We went into the last day with three teams that could have won the tournament.
Exactly.
So that,
and a Grand Slam. And the most unlikely, I mean, I'm not sure it's the most unlikely Grand Slam, but it's a pretty unlikely Grand Slam. I don't think this is as good a Wales team as the previous ones that have won it.
Well, we said that this was a great schedule for Wales to win a Grand Slam, England and Ireland at home.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Excellent. So I don't know if it was a totally... I'm not trying to take it away. To win five games back-to-back is amazing. It was now 14 games, JB Cup winners.
Yeah. I mean, what is the record?
JB Cup
again?
Holders, sorry.
18. England and New Zealand, both
now,
in the last
we need
few years.
To, we need to know if these warm-up games count.
I don't think they do. If they do, I mean...
So the World Cup quarter-final could be that they're... If they do, let's assume they don't for a second. The World Cup quarter-final could be Wales losing the record, not breaking the world record, and losing to England.
Because there's five teams in the group, isn't there? So there's four group games, so it'll be to decide
who's
whether...
Who's in Wales' group again?
I've got a feeling it's Australia, but that was last...
Australia and Fiji, is it not? Yeah. 1-9.
Oh no, Fiji! Ooh. Oh no!
you want Fiji early doors?
Oh, I'm sure, hopefully World Rugby have organised it so Fiji's schedule isn't every 5 days.
Australia, Wales, Georgia, Fiji, and America's two on this one, which must be
Canada
or no, because Canada were the repechage winners. So is it Uruguay? Why is this all America's two? Uruguay, yes,
right. Wow, Wales could. I mean, it's a hard group. That
it's not as hard as England's group.
Please read it to me.
I would take Wales beating the world record and England winning the World Cup. So, I'll let you out of that.
So hang on. England have got France.
Argentina.
But then USA and Tonga.
On current form, I'd rather that group.
So you would rather have France play against France and Argentina than Australia, Georgia, Fiji?
Yeah, I would actually.
Maybe because France have been so inept. I would agree with you, but if they get it right,
France
just
World
for that,
Cup.
Just
got
for that
to,
one
for
game,
two or three finals,
they're even bad in the last World Cup. They were, in fact, record bad in the last World Cup
when they got hammered by
New Zealand,
but they still made it out of the group stage.
Did they?
Didn't they?
Did they play? I don't think they did.
Going back to the England Scotland, what's the best rugby game you've ever seen? Best international rugby game you've ever seen? Because I was trying to think where that England Scotland game ranks.
Just for the sake of fairness, the best rugby game I've seen, which is not in the AJ Bell, would be...
They did make it out of the group stage because that New Zealand hammering 62-13 was the quarter final.
Right. Probably Wales versus England, Grand Slam 2, where Mike Phillips scores in the corner and Eddie Butler goes wild. Probably that was the best game that I've seen. Or still the quarterfinal with New Zealand France, or semi-final New Zealand France.
Possibly the most excited I have ever got in a rugby game, including England winning the World Cup, is Japan beating South Africa. That
yes,
amazing.
That is number one.
I was still like an hour after the game. I was still like visibly shook. I was still like I couldn't calm down, couldn't sit down, couldn't talk properly.
We had an amazing day out then because we were in... I was playing for Broughton Park and we were playing in Carlisle. And because the Japanese were winning, there was an amazing sense of like rugby camaraderie between everyone. We were all rooting for this one team to beat the South Africans. And when they did, the place just went... It just erupted. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that is the best rugby game I've seen. And well, I was saying the England-Scotland game is really close. But the other one, I can't remember what World Cup it was. What was the crazy one where France beat New Zealand in the semi-final? 99.
That was 99. Because that's been... That comeback
was just...
has been referenced for the England-Scotland comeback.
Gorbajosa, Bernard Sals, Lemaison.
Dominici.
Did Entomac play?
Yes, I think he may have.
Yeah. Patrick Tabacco, did he
Magnon? Not Magnon. What's his name? Olivier...
Mania. I'm not sure. Maybe a bit too early for him.
Might have been.
I think Palouse played. I think Peter...
De Villiers
might have played. Ibanez probably played. Yeah, it was I'd love to see that team. Anyway, that's probably a chat for another time.
Yes.
Than looking up old French teams.
It's good, though, looking up old French
got
teams.
Got it in front of me.
Oh, go on. Let's see how many... So.
Okay, I'll go...
So, yeah.
De Villiers, tight head. Ibanez.
Let's look at backs first because they're easier. Gorbajosa, Bernard Sals.
Dominici 11. Gorbajosa,
Bernard Sals. Yeah, correct. Dominici 11, correct.
Have I said Gorbajosa?
Yes, 15.
Hold on, so 99. So, Castagnède wouldn't have been around.
No, but Lamaison played at 10.
Lamaison played at 10.
The other guy, who am I missing? Am I missing a winger?
Nine.
You're missing the 12 and 13 and the nine.
That's Gorbajosa. Gorbajosa and
Entomac, yeah. 12. Entomac played 12.
Yeah, but those were 13. Stefan Glass?
No. Richard?
No.
Dorte.
Oh, we wouldn't have got that. He was the nine?
A winner of the World Rugby Player of the Year. One of the early winners.
No, it was Galtier.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Tabacco?
Nope.
Lemania?
Palouse, as we said. Do we get that? Did
Palouse, yeah. So right? Palouse is there. You've mentioned a couple of them.
I've got no idea who
De Villiers,
the second
was. We said.
Ibanez?
De Villiers wasn't. Ibanez was hooker. So I don't recognise.
Frank Tonnerre
as tight head.
And I'm kind of running out of players now. Go on.
So you'll know. So you've said Olivier Magne. He coached the blind side, or certainly he's six.
Remy Martin. No, he's too late.
He coached France at one stage.
Oh,
what's his face? The one that went nuts and they all...
Yes.
The one that went nuts. Narrow it down for us, Tim.
The one that they had the revolt.
Yes,
against. I know who you mean, but I can't remember his name.
Lievremont.
Oh, what about the Moroccan guy?
What's his name?
Benazi.
Abdel Benazi.
Correct.
Yes, rugby knowledge 101 right there. That's in.
Off Christophe Jouyet.
No,
number eight. And Cedric Soule.
New Zealand, now since we've done it, New Zealand. 99 New Zealand would have had...
Cullen, Lomu. And
Marshall
Cullen was playing 13.
Really?
Yeah. Lomu's in there.
And the other wing would have been
Marshall was not in there.
So, Baron Kelleher would be the scrum half.
It's listed as Jason Kelleher.
Wrong.
But I assume it was Byron. Unless he's.
The other wing was Umaga.
Umaga was on the wing.
Yeah, because he played wing then.
Wow, good knowledge. Quite impressed.
He was the
Jeff Wilson.
Was Jeff Wilson the one that played cricket as well?
Yes, it was. Yeah, is Peter Alatini the 12? Any chance?
No.
I don't know who the 12 would be then.
Zinzan.
Yes, Zinzan Brook was playing.
Not 12.
No, not 12.
Who would be the 12 then?
No, yeah, 12 is...
Ian Jones.
No, a guy called Alama Iremia.
Never heard of him.
Who's playing 10?
So it wasn't Mertens.
Who was it?
It wasn't Mertens, which means it would be... No, Tony Brown is too late on, and he also had two caps, so it's definitely not him.
Carlos Spencer.
No. I don't know.
I put you out of your misery?
Yeah, come on.
It was Mertens.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Tell us the pack, because I'm not going to get it.
I thought it was Mertens. Oh, it was Marshall who said they didn't play.
Marshall didn't play.
Yeah, sorry.
Tell us the pack.
Carl Huft.
Anton Oliver?
Anton Oliver Craig Dowd.
Oh, what a play. He's one of the great tight heads.
Chris Jack?
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Orlo Brown. Don't worry. I'm getting him confused.
Norm Maxwell.
Yep.
Zinzan Brook. Reuben Thorne.
Zinzan Brook in the lock? Was lock?
He's listed as lock. Cronfeld.
Josh Cronfeld.
Tane Randall.
Do you remember when Leicester had about 17 open sides? Yeah. Neil Back, Lewis Moody, Josh Cronfeld, Serge Betson.
Serge Betson didn't think it was Leicester.
He went to Wasps.
He went to Wasps, yes, of course.
Tane Randall.
Wow, that's a... Yeah, well, time won't remember that All Blacks team fondly because they lost, so there.
I like that. Can we, like, every week, building up to the World Cup, can we pick one World Cup match and just see how many players
shout
we can...
out names chaotically.
I like it. Let's call this one a day, and we will have another podcast briefly summarising the big news stories, looking ahead to a week of domestic rugby, because the rugby keeps on coming 2 weeks away, and we've got quarterfinals of Europe as well.
Brutal.
It's good stuff. At Rugby Podcast, you can watch this again, look at the wonderful Egg Chasers jersey that JB's sporting on the YouTube feed, where you should subscribe as well. But just generally, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.